There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
We are going to have a look now what's happening with numbers, datas and trade. G7 at the end of this week, isn't it, Marks?
It is. Well, no, the end of last week. It's been happening in Canada. And US Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin has faced sharp criticism from angry finance ministers of other G7 nations over impositions of new tariffs on steel and aluminium imports. It was a big heated meeting in Whistler, which is heated and Whistler don't normally go together. It's a very cold place over on the west of Canada. The EU and Canada have been threatening to retaliate. Francis Bruno Le Maire warned of a trade war and says it could begin within days. He also said that Donald Trump was risking economic destabilization of the planet, which is a good time, I guess, to bring in Khatija Haque, senior economist at Emirates NBD. Morning to you.
Good morning, Malcolm.
Let's kick off looking actually at those tariffs. I'm looking at a tweet from the US president who says, when you're almost $800 billion a year down on trade, you can't lose a trade war. The US has been ripped off by other countries for years on trade. Time to get smart! Exclamation mark. We were largely expecting the steel and the aluminium tariffs. Markets knew it was coming. It already sort of factored it in. EU not happy though.
I'm not sure that markets had fully factored it in, because remember, almost immediately after he announced them a couple of months ago, he then gave an exemption for strategic allies like Canada, like the European Union and like Mexico. And it was those exemptions which were removed at the end of last week and which has triggered this extremely negative and understandably negative reaction from the G7 finance ministers over the weekend. Now, I actually read a really interesting piece, I think it was on Bloomberg on the weekend, which basically suggested that in typical Donald Trump fashion, he was using trade policy to achieve other aims, particularly those related to security and defense. So, for example, when he said, you know, we're going to impose these tariffs on our neighbors and on the European Union, Steve Mnuchin basically said, well, there is actually room for negotiation. And the issues that they raised when they talked about negotiation was the fact that the European Union countries are not spending 2% of GDP on defense, which is what the US has been trying to get them to do for many years now. And they've basically not been spending enough on NATO defense. And this is something which Donald Trump has also raised quite aggressively with Angela Merkel and other European Union leaders. So he's saying, if you increase defense spending, we may then ease off on these tariffs. The other issue which they've raised as a potential bargaining chip is the sanctions on Iran. Obviously, the European Union has taken a much more modest or moderate approach. And that's something which, again, the US may be looking to have leverage over.
The EU has said they're going to take this to the WTO. Liam Fox saying that the sanctions are illegal. How much could any other body actually talk the US into removing them?
Well, look, I think everyone involved in trade policy globally understands that the WTO is not an institution where you're going to get a speedy resolution to any legal issue that you may raise. But I do think that is the appropriate forum. The WTO was set up to mediate and adjudicate trade disputes. And one of the problems is actually that the US hasn't allowed the bodies that make those decisions to be fully staffed. So they've not actually approved the members onto these boards that would then be able to adjudicate these kinds of decisions. So again, they're at a disadvantage because the US is basically saying we don't actually agree with the WTO. We don't know that it's any use. And we're not really going to fully engage with it. And that is a problem, because that is the forum where these kinds of disputes are supposed to be settled.
Moving on to the suspect Donald Trump tweet, the numbers were that US jobs growth was faster than expected in May, employers adding 223,000 positions, and the unemployment rate fell further to 3.8%, having fallen to 3.9% in the previous month. Good news in general, so a steady path. So the Americans Americans have every right to celebrate that. It's a step in the right direction.
They do. In fact, for the last couple of months, we've seen jobs numbers around the 150 to 160 mark. So a reading of 223,000 new jobs in May was a really, really strong performance in terms of job creation. And the other interesting and important point is that over the last couple of years, a lot of analysts have been saying, yes, there's been strong jobs growth, but it's really in the lower paid services industries. Now we're starting to see really solid growth numbers in manufacturing and mining and other kinds of industries, which suggests that it's becoming a much more broad-based recovery in terms of jobs. So, for example, last month we had 25,000 new jobs in construction, 18,000 new jobs in manufacturing. So this does suggest that it's all sectors of the economy which are firing on all cylinders now, rather than just, you know, the very, very part-time, you know, lowly paid services in retail or hospitality, for example. So that does give a lot more ammunition to the Federal Reserve to, you know, when they meet next in June, when they are expected to raise the federal funds rate by another 25 basis points. That seems almost a done deal now. The unemployment rate is at its lowest since 2010. Even the broad measure of unemployment, the U6 unemployment, which includes people who are working part-time, although they would prefer full-time jobs, or people who would accept a job even though they're not actively looking, that rate has fallen to a 17-year low of 7.6%. So there is, again, some sign of modest wage growth as well. So there's no reason for the Fed not to raise in June, I guess.
There's a federal rule in the States which is intended to preserve the neutrality of the statistics, where the president doesn't comment before or immediately after they're released. And an hour before they came out, the President Donald Trump said he was really looking forward to seeing the numbers and gave the time that they were going to be coming out. Now, there's obviously raised a lot of eyebrows around the world, but particularly in the US, because it's suggested, if he's previewing some numbers coming out, that they're going to be good, not negative. It was unlikely that he would do that. It's a bit odd.
It's very odd. It's absolutely unusual. This is not something which any other president has done. Those numbers have typically been regarded as state secrets.
Unusual, but illegal?
I don't know that you could say that they were illegal, and I'm not a legal expert, but it certainly does add a tremendous element of additional uncertainty, which markets don't like, because, as you say, the next time the figures come out, if he doesn't make an indication that they're positive, does that mean that they're going to disappoint? And this is something, you know, it may seem a small thing, but these are really important. This is a very important data point for the US economy, and it's something which markets can react to very aggressively. So for the president to come out and really leak it is not great at all. But I can't say I'm surprised, really.
But the numbers were great. And can we take that as a lot of the policy that we're seeing, some of it very controversial, coming out from the Trump White House is working?
I don't think so, because when you're looking at these trade issues and the fact that he's trying to promote domestic manufacturing and steel industries, etc., the actual tariffs haven't been in place all that long. And in fact, the exemptions on the key export or import markets have only just been removed a few days ago. So, you know, the main issue with the US trade imbalance is actually with China. The trade deficit with China is something like $320 billion. You compare that with Canada, which is around $12 billion. So, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense to focus on your neighbors, which have been your strategic allies, and, you know, when really the big problem is with China. It seems to me more sensible to tackle the issues with China directly rather than bring the whole world into the game.
Yeah. Well, generally, though, what are you thinking about geopolitical tensions at the moment? I mean, the love affair between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un seems to have been rekindled with a big letter.
The world's largest envelope.
Massive. Will it re-stimulate postal services everywhere? Where do we really stand on this? It's all a bit on and off.
It is a bit on and off, and it's very, very difficult to say, because we're not privy to the discussions which are going on at a very high level between officials in the two countries. But it certainly does seem that the meeting that was set for, I think it's June 12th in Singapore, is going to go ahead at this stage. But I do I have reservations about how much would actually be achieved at that meeting. You know, whether it's just going to be an opportunity for the two leaders to shake hands and go back and tell their own constituents, yes, we've got what we wanted, or whether there's actually going to be any substantive movement forward in terms of denuclearization and the lifting of some sanctions on North Korea.
It is inconceivable that it won't just be a photo op. I mean, everything that will be said will be pre-agreed, won't it? There'll be no
absolutely
negotiation on the spot.
That's what the officials are working on right now, is what the agenda is, what each side is prepared to concede, so that hopefully they have something to actually announce on the day. But again, you know, no one's ever been able to negotiate with the North Koreans in this kind of way. So it's the first time that we've actually had this kind of engagement at this level, and it remains to be seen whether it bears any fruit.
Well, before we let you go, Khadija, let's put a UAE spin on some of those big headlines this morning. What the tariffs could mean for the aluminium industry here in the UAE, what a possible Fed rate decision after those unemployment numbers could mean for our banking system.
So on the aluminium issue, the UAE has already been subject to the tariffs because it was not one of the countries which were granted that exemption a couple of months ago. But that has been offset by the increased price of aluminium because of the Rusal sanctions. So overall, I think the impact on the UAE's aluminium industry is actually going to be very, very limited. They've probably be able to find other buyers for their aluminium that might have gone to the US very easily, and they're going to get higher prices for it. So we're not overly worried about that. In terms of the Fed rate hike in June, it will translate into higher borrowing costs across the GCC, not just in the UAE, because we have a pegged currency to the dollar. And so as the US raises rates, our interest rates go up as well. It is something that, you know, we've obviously seen for the last year and a half, really. Overall, there's not a huge amount of growth in private sector credit, so it's not particularly helpful to, again, have higher rates, but it's something the economy's going to have to get used to.
Khadija Hank, Head of MENA Research at Emirates NBD, thanks for your time this morning.
You're welcome.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.